Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm Eric Christensen, pharmacist and your host. Today I'm going to be covering azithromycin. First, I wanted to cover a question I get once in a while. So the free top 200 PDF, 31-page PDF, can be found at reallifepharmacology.com. Cover the top 200 drugs and really important pearls associated with those drugs, and those pearls are often highly tested on pharmacology exams, board exams, and things like that. So that's what that resource is all about. I've had that question a couple times now. I get it free simply for following the blog. I'll give you email updates as to when I've got a new podcast released is primarily what I use your email for, and of course nothing else in that respect. So reallifepharmacology.com, you can get that. Let's get into azithromycin, what you came here to listen for. So this drug is an antibiotic for infection at its most basic level. The mechanism of action of this drug is that it binds to the 50S ribosomal subunit. And in that process, ultimately what the drug does is it blocks bacteria from creating, from producing protein, also called protein biosynthesis. So what that does is stops the bacteria from growing, from replicating, and basically getting those essential proteins that it needs. And that's a good thing if we're trying to treat bacteria. Now, the uses of this medication are many. There's numerous infections. I'm not going to cover all of them by any means, but I definitely throw out some common things that you see in clinical practice. So pneumonia is a big one. Another big one, that it's an alternate therapy. So probably most commonly I see it in patients who are truly allergic to penicillin, amoxicillin type antibiotics. Ear infection, alternative for strep throat. You may also see it for endocarditis prophylaxis, that type of use as well. COPD, there is an indication for short-term use, as well as longer-term preventative use as well in trying to prevent infection and COPD exacerbations. MAC, Mycobacterium avium complex, which is common in HIV AIDS management. One other one in combination with ceftriaxone that you may see in practice is gonorrhea, chlamydia infection. So oftentimes those two agents are used together to manage that sexually transmitted disease. One other rare one that is prevented by vaccination is pertussis or whooping cough. So it does potentially have some activity there as well. So I think that gives you a pretty decent overview of what bugs, what infections are covered by azithromycin. Again, not a totally all-inclusive list that I went through, but some really common ones that I've actually seen out in real-life practice. Now, talking about pharmacokinetics, azithromycin is kind of unique compared to a lot of other antibiotics. Many antibiotics are dosed multiple times a day, not all, but you think of, you know, your cephalexins, your amoxicillins, clindamycin, sulfamethoxazole, trimethoprim. A lot of these drugs are dosed multiple times per day, and that's due primarily because of their pharmacokinetics. Azithromycin has a really long half-life, so this drug sticks around in the body for a long amount of time. And with that, that's advantageous where you don't have to dose it quite as frequently. So in a patient that's getting your standard Z-Pak, so that's 500 milligrams for the first dose, and then 250 milligrams for the next 4 days, that drug, that half-life, that's going to last approximately between 2 to 3 days in the bloodstream when you give that first dose. So you're only giving that medication for, you know, 5 days, but the use, the activity of that drug, because it lasts so long in the body, you know, extends to that 7 to 10 days, maybe even plus type period. So just an important thing to remember, and that's one of the reasons why azithromycin, we can get away with once daily dosing compared to a lot of other antibiotics, which usually require multiple daily dosing. Adverse effects. Really, azithromycin, I think, is pretty well tolerated. Probably the most common thing I have seen is GI upset, diarrhea. So that's, you know, pretty standard with any antibiotic. But I will say azithromycin doesn't tend to go to the level of, let's say, an Augmentin, for example. That tends to cause significantly more GI upset and diarrhea. Now, I will say with an asterisk that those adverse effects, especially GI adverse effects, are dose dependent. So if you're giving a patient 500 milligrams of azithromycin versus 250, you're probably more likely to encounter some of that GI upset, nausea, and or diarrhea, depending upon the situation there. So that's probably the most common adverse effect that you're going to see with azithromycin. QTC prolongation is another important thing to think about, at least, especially in patients that may be at risk for this already. So maybe they've already got a prolonged QT interval. Maybe they've got hypokalemia or a history of it, maybe a lower heart rate, low magnesium levels. Maybe they've got a, you know, genetic disorder or something that predisposes them to that issue as well. So important to think about. I will talk about some other medications when I get to drug interactions and that QTC prolongation risk. One other thing that I have come across, again, very rare, not very common at all, but some fluctuation in LFTs. So again, not really common, and you know, cases of severe hepatic impairment are rare. There are case reports out there, but again, usually with an antibiotic, limited course of therapy, it's probably not going to be much of an issue. I would maybe worry about it a little bit more in a patient who is maybe taking chronic azithromycin in that severe COPD situation that I mentioned in the uses there. Let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and then we'll get back to it with drug interactions. If you're looking for great clinical content, my book Pharmacotherapy, as well as The Thrill of the Case, is on Audible, and you can absolutely get the link to your first audiobook for free at audible.com. So if you go to meded101.com/store, STORE, you can find the link to that. If you've never been an Audible member and never had an Audible book, they give you your first book for free. So you can basically get 7-8 hours of free clinical pharmacy content, much like this podcast. And that link you can get at meded101.com/store. I believe if you scroll down to the bottom, you can find the link to both of those audiobooks and snag your first one for free, and obviously give Audible a test run as well there. So go check that out. Also on that same page, meded101.com/store, you can find all my resources for board certification exams like NAPLEX and BCPS, BCACP, as well as the geriatric pharmacist exam as well. So go check that out. Support the sponsor where you can there. Greatly appreciated. And we'll get back into drug interactions here with azithromycin. So the first thing I do think about is QTC prolongation when it comes to drug interactions with azithromycin. I think of some of those and older antiarrhythmics, amiodarone, maybe a procainamide, quinidine, dofetilide. There's a laundry list of older antiarrhythmics. They are seldom used. I would say amiodarone is by far the medication, the antiarrhythmic that I see used most often. But you got to remember that these meds do put patients at risk of QTC prolongation. And as we add on other medications to that patient's regimen, this can exacerbate that risk potentially. So that's kind of the first thing I think about. I take a peek, see if that patient's on any antiarrhythmics. Other classes of medications that may prolong QT interval, antipsychotics are a good class example. SSRIs, I would say specifically, I do think about citalopram a little bit more so than some of the other agents. Ondansetron is, and those class of medications, another one I think of. And quinolone antibiotics are another one I think of as well. Now, the likelihood that somebody's on azithromycin and a quinolone antibiotic, I would say, are relatively low. But I think it is important to keep some of those medications in mind that could kind of pile onto that QTC prolongation effect. Thinking about azithromycin and drug interactions in general, so azithromycin is a macrolide antibiotic. I can't remember if I mentioned that at the start, but within that class of macrolides, there's also erythromycin and clarithromycin, two common agents that you do see once in a while, but you don't see them nearly as often as azithromycin. And one of those reasons is erythromycin and clarithromycin have a lot more drug interactions. So azithromycin, as far as the macrolides go, is much better as far as not causing so many drug interactions. And I plan to cover erythromycin and clarithromycin on an upcoming episode because they have some unique clinical quirks and pearls and specific situations that you may see those meds used in. But with that, azithromycin definitely less drug interactions than clarithromycin or erythromycin. Other drug interactions I've come across, encountered, thought about, cardiac glycosides. So that the classic example is digoxin. Digoxin concentrations may be increased by azithromycin. So definitely something to think about if somebody's displaying signs and symptoms of digoxin toxicity, which I talked about in the digoxin podcast. Definitely something to think about if a medication was added, like azithromycin, that could bump up those concentrations some. Warfarin's another one I wanted to mention. Not a super, super strong interaction, but if you've got somebody that's got an INR of 2.8, 2.9, and now you put them into the 4 to 5 range, you know, that patient's at greater risk for bleeding. Their blood is that much thinner. So definitely something to think about there. In the scope of severity of azithromycin causing an interaction with warfarin, in no way is it as severe as something like sulfamethoxazole trimethoprim, so that'd be Bactrim, or Flagyl, which is metronidazole. So not as severe of an interaction, but definitely something to think about. And with warfarin, whenever any antibiotics are started, it's definitely something I think about as far as the risk of raising concentrations, and something I look at anyway. One last one I wanted to mention while we're finishing up here is dabigatran. So concentrations of dabigatran can be increased with azithromycin. So as far as monitoring goes, we're going to look out for increased bruising, increased bleeding. Dabigatran is an anticoagulant there. So again, warfarin, dabigatran, definitely something to think about with those medications and monitoring patients at risk for bleed. That's going to sum it up for today. If you enjoyed the show, leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. That's greatly appreciated. Helps us reach a bigger audience, get the message of pharmacology and education out there, which is obviously our primary mission here. So feel free to do that. Again, that free 30-plus page PDF on the top 200 drugs, free to you. You can get that by signing up at reallifepharmacology.com. All we ask is for an email, no other significant personal information there. So you'll also get updates to when we come out with a new podcast as well. So that's a neat thing too. So I'm going to sign off for today. Thanks so much for listening. Take care and have a great rest of your day.